It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk about a new report out about chemicals in Lake Michigan.
But first, the Packers played their first game of the season yesterday, losing to the San Francisco 49ers.
Now that the NFL season is full swing, critics, analysts are asking if football can face what they call its demons, referring to the recent concussion settlement, arrests of some players, the murder trial of Aaron Hernandez. Is this something the NFL can overcome or needs to overcome?
Do you think the NFL can overcome some of its most recent hurdles? And has any of the bad stuff about football been keeping you away? Let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Jason Keitel joins us now. He's sports writer for CBS in New York City. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So before this football season started, they got some headlines maybe they didn't exactly want. The NFL settled a case out of court with over 4,000 former football players. They had sued the NFL for concussion-related injuries. Some people have said, oh, the NFL just wanted to get that done before the season started. Did you make anything of the timing?
I did make something of the timing. The Shield, of course, the Shield being the NFL logo, is always concerned with its appearance and its appeal to the public. It was twofold. One, they were concerned about the public relations hit it would take. And also, they wanted to settle before going to trial because they did not want to reveal any research, any information that may have cast a bad light upon them. In other words, any information they may have had on concussions and the impact football had on young men, the settlement sort of absolves them in that regard. They didn't have to reveal any research they may have done on football and head injuries, which is the people who, the greatest detractors of the settlement, that was their biggest beef. One, they felt they should have held out more money, and two, they wanted to get into the sort of the meat of the investigation, which is, you know, reveal the papers, what did they know and when did they know it kind of thing.
Do you think that fans in general, either serious fans or maybe those more on the margins, are worried about this? Do you think people are saying, this concussion thing, it's turning me off the game a little bit?
I think the civilized thing would be to say yes, but I don't think so. I think people who were opposed to the sport in general, or opposed to having those children play it, this sort of just reinforces how they feel about it. I think people on the margins, as you say, might be slightly affected by it. I've heard a number of people, and I've spoken to a number of people who have said, I do not want my child to play football, and this, you know, merely confirms that feeling. But generally speaking, if you feel strongly one way or another, I don't think this affects it. I think it would be more of an issue for parents than it would be for fans. In other words, a fan is on the periphery anyway, so we're not really impacted one way or another by it. But vis-a-vis parents and children, it certainly raises a few flags. But I don't think if Johnny really wants to play football and the parent wants to please the child, I don't know that this really is going to affect it, because we don't have enough data yet on the impact it has on the Pop Warner kid, on the high school kid. I think we are more concerned by the college and NFL impact, because we're obviously larger, the hits are stronger, and thus the concussions will be stronger and the head injuries will be more pronounced. But I don't think there's enough data out there to say one way or another what it will do to a child.
Well, we've seen comments like from people like the father of Tom Brady, New England Patriots quarterback. His dad said, if I had it to do over again, I don't know if I'd have him play. Or Kurt Warner, a star quarterback himself, saying he's a little squeamish maybe about his own kids playing. Those are a couple names that it's kind of interesting to hear that they're even feeling a little squeamish about it.
Well, what's interesting also is like any deleterious behavior, it seems to have a different impact on different people. In other words, I grew up a Steelers fan in the 70s. And when I was a child, I remember Lynn Swann being carted off constantly from hits from Jack Tatum and George Atkinson and various Raiders or whomever. And yet, he's very lucid, very active, very prosperous, very aware of his surroundings. Whereas you have people who weren't at least outwardly affected, it didn't seem, by concussions, and yet they have been debilitated beyond repair. So, again, it's sort of this murky area where we cannot exactly define what hit does what to somebody else. For example, Troy Aikman was forced into retirement because of concussions, yet Troy seems very articulate and seems to do broadcasts for the NFL on Fox without any impediment. So, yeah, it's easy to say in retrospect I wouldn't have my kid do it, but I don't know that we have enough proof that that would happen.
On a more fundamental level, and you hear this argument fairly often, we know that football is a high-impact game. We know there are dangers of long-term injury. As long as kids know what they're getting into when they go into the game, and maybe the pros know it and they're making lots of money, what's the big deal?
Well, absolutely. And then we get to the matter of choice. In other words, how much do we want to legislate human behavior? Obviously, if somebody's 10 years old, the parents become the ultimate governing body. But once Johnny is 18 years old and he wants to play football, who are we, who is anyone, to stop them from doing that? Again, I think that was the biggest problem with this settlement, was that we do not know exactly how much research the NFL has done. You know, the NFL is engaged in this kind of this sort of retrograde analysis. You know, it's like a form of foxhole prayer. Once they realized they were in deep water, they became humanitarians. You know, I don't know if you remember, but just 5 years ago, ESPN used to have this segment every Sunday called Jacked Up.
Right,
the hardest hits humanly possible, knock the snot out of someone, everybody chuckles around the table, and now it's a taboo. So, you know, I think we're all a little bit sanctimonious in that regard, because I myself, and I think a lot of people, took some delight out of the violence of the sport. And now that it has become politically incorrect to do so, we pretend to be a bit more civilized. But I think the violence of the game kind of speaks to our nature. And I hate to sound like a savage, but one of the part of the appeal of football is its violence.
Well, another headline, I guess, the NFL didn't want earlier this year, off-field violence, most notably former New England Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez, a murder trial. And, of course, we hear in the papers from time to time other, maybe not so bad as murder, but other criminal cases. Is there a crime problem with NFL players, or is there a lot of media attention when there is a crime problem?
I would tend to say the latter. I think that the crimes tend to become amplified because they are celebrities, they're stars, they're young, they're rich, they're handsome, they're at the peak of their appetites. I think I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think you'll find that men who commit crime tend to be in the very demographic we're watching in the NFL. You don't think, at least I wouldn't assume that 50-year-olds are the ones out committing murder. It would tend to be people of Aaron Hernandez's vintage. It is a problem. At the same time, how do you prevent it? And what my biggest problem with the Hernandez case, and I wrote extensively about this for CBS, is this notion that the Patriots, I don't know, you recall that Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, said he was duped. He wasn't duped. They have, every NFL team has a phalanx of former cops on them. They do tons of research. They do tons of background checks. They know almost everything. I remember Chris Carter talking the other day, the former wide receiver for the Vikings who just was inducted to the Hall of Fame. He said the Eagles and then the Vikings went back to his grade school days interviewing people from his childhood. So we know that there are some bad apples out there. But the question is, the NFL is taking a chance. They're weighing the risk versus the reward. In terms of keeping them from playing, unless you've committed a certifiable crime like Aaron Hernandez, what do you do? Do you tell them they can't pursue their dreams because they may do something in the future? It's a very tough thing to do, but I think, again, it's amplified because of the celebrity.
We focused on a couple of the big problems here, the concussions and the crimes. By and large, though, NFL's doing pretty well, isn't it?
Well, if you consider $9 billion good, yes, they're doing quite well. The revenue is just growing exponentially. And now that you have these sort of branches of digital media brands, it's just going to take off. I've heard some estimates that by 2016, the NFL will generate close to $15 billion annually. It's basically it's a personal mint. It really is. They have, first of all, the product itself is a very good product if you obviously take away the glitches of crime and the spine and brain damage. And the crime, you also have just a beautiful product in terms of the symmetry and the way it's presented on television. As a matter of fact, the NFL is kind of worried about its game attendance at the stadium because it is such a wonderful product. And now you have DirecTV and the Red Zone channel and all these things. You know, you can watch the game on a 65-foot screen, and it feels like you're right there. You can practically see the player's nose hairs, whereas you don't want to necessarily go out in the weather and when it's 15 degrees outside and freeze your buns off when you can just watch it at home. So I think the NFL, they're just sort of, they're masters at promoting their own product, and it is a great product. And frankly, we're hooked. I mean, let's be honest. The NFL has usurped baseball and basketball as America's game.
Talking to Jason Keitel, sports writer for CBS in New York City.
And what do you think? Do you think the NFL can overcome some of its most recent issues? And what do you think about letting your son or grandson play football? Does that bother you? And are you still watching the sport despite some of the issues we've been talking about today? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Thanks, Kristen. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. And we're talking now about the demons professional football will have to face this season, like the concussion controversy and the arrest of players, to be specific, and wondering whether these things might get in the way of enjoyment for the fans.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Are you a football fan and you're going to watch the games? Does the news about concussions and this big concussion settlement make you think twice? Do you think changes need to be made, or it's just the nature of the game? 800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@WPR.org. Oh, and why do you think football has taken over as America's game over baseball? I'll ask our guest that in just a minute, but first I want to get to the phones. We've got Shelby in Black River Falls. Shelby, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you today?
I'm good. What do you think about this?
The young lady I just spoke with when I called in, I really did have an opinion that my son, he's in Northern Nevada, I just recently got transferred back to Wisconsin, but he's been playing two seasons a year. They play spring and fall, Northern Nevada, up by Reno area. Mm-hmm. And these boys have all played together since the first grade. Most of them are straight-A students, 4.0s. I'd have to say probably at least 50% of them are 3.0 or higher. There has been some injuries, and something else, too. When you sign your release, at, not verbatim, but close enough, it does state on the bottom, including up to death, mm-hmm. when you do sign your release for Pop Warner like that. So, I mean, there's, I think the nature of the game is going to be injuries, stingers. Hunter's had to have a head x-ray once already.
But you think it's worth it? You think it's been good for him despite the injury?
Absolutely. It's teaching them camaraderie. You do have to, with the professional football, some of the boys like to emulate, and you have to nip that right in the butt.
I see that at the soccer games on the weekends, too. Shelby, thanks a lot for the call. Yep. So what do you think, Jason? Despite the risks, football for kids, probably other sports, too, has benefits that outweigh the risks.
He makes a wonderful point, which is we often laud the aesthetics of sports, the larger narrative being it teaches you discipline, teaches you teamwork, and the physical benefits of cardiovascular activity. By and large, you'll find, with some exceptions obviously, like head injury, you'll find by and large that sports are a very, very healthy endeavor. And I just wanted to get back real quick to the point you were talking about the arrests. You know, we're talking about between 30 and 35 people out of a league of 1,700. Mm. And when you think about it, it's a microscopic portion not only of civilization, but also of the sport itself. So, again, we focus on the negative, just as we focus on the truck fire on the shoulder of the road rather than getting to work. So there's a certain voyeuristic quality to it that we, unfortunately, do enjoy. But back to Shelby's point, yes, athletics, the benefits of athletics far outweigh the dangers. And I think people aren't worried about CTE, CTE being, of course, the central problem with head injury, which is basically a protein buildup in the brain. And I don't think that people believe that their child is building that protein at 10 years old.
I don't want to just focus on the negative. And you said just a few minutes ago that football has really supplanted baseball, basketball, the other sports as America's game. Is there something inherent about the sport? Or is it that the league, the NFL, has made choices and seized opportunities that the other professional sports leagues haven't?
Great question. It's both. It's a brilliant marketing strategy, and the game itself is so wonderful. And I think that football has replaced the other sports in a cultural sense as sort of the melting pot. I think you'll find that there have been an alarming number of minorities who have stopped playing baseball, at least in the United States. And I don't think you find as much diversity in basketball as you do in football. And I think that's a contributing factor as well.
And with the NFL, the salary cap is something that I always wonder, is that something that makes the difference as compared to other leagues where the salary cap briefly says this teams can only spend so much on their players? It supposedly guarantees some parity, competitiveness. Do you think that makes it more appealing than a game like baseball that doesn't have that?
Great, great question, Rob. Yes, absolutely. This sort of legislative socialism, this legislative parity. Yeah, you know, you wouldn't think that such a format would work in a capitalistic society, but it does. You know, basically, Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, wants everybody to go 8-8. And the beauty of that notion is that you can go, if you will, from zero to a hero in a season. You have teams like the Saints that can win 3 games 1 year and then win the Super Bowl the next. You had the Rams, who were wretched before Kurt Warner. You mentioned Kurt Warner. Before he got there, and then they win a Super Bowl. Football reinforces the notion that you can hit the jackpot overnight more than any other team. It always seems like the Lakers or the Celtics are dominating in basketball, and unfortunately, in my city here, the Yankees have a horrible reputation. They've even been called the Evil Empire for just outspending everybody else. That can't happen in football because you can only spend whatever it is, $80, $90 million a year on your team.
And I also wanted to ask the rise of fantasy sports. It's not unique to football, but it seems like, again, after some initial reluctance, the NFL kind of seized on that. Do you think that is part of the explanation for the growing appeal and maybe the growing revenue for the NFL?
Another excellent question. Yes. In fact, it's a two-pronged endeavor. You have fantasy sports, which seem to lend itself better to football than any other team sport in America. And let's be honest, the gorilla in the room is gambling. And I can't, it would be unfair to say 50% of Americans watch because they have money on the game, but countless billions of dollars are on every football game every Sunday. And that is a huge part of the draw of football.
And then some decisions the NFL has been playing with for a while. Right now, 4 preseason games for every team, 16 regular season games. There's been talk floated again and again. It seems like let's take 2 of those preseason games, make them a regular season game. What has been the argument pro or con there? And what do you think about that in the future of the league?
But that's going to fail, Rob. And I'll tell you why, because Roger Goodell will seem rather duplicitous. If he goes out on television, he tells everyone that he is given $30, $40, $50 million grants to scientists to research the effects that football has on the brain, and then he turns around at the same time and extends the season by 2 games. That would be a public relations disaster, and I don't see that happening. In terms of preseason, I've talked to coaches and general managers, and all of them say to a man that the 4 games are essential. Obviously, you know that Tom Brady is going to make your football team, but games 3 and 4 are essential to find out who's going to fill out the 53-man roster. And there is absolute uniformity in that regard. They say those games are essential. But the 2 extra games just won't fly if you're saying you're trying to protect the players, and then you put them in more peril by extending the season.
One hurdle the NFL hasn't really overcome, when people say football anywhere outside of this country, they think of what we call soccer. We had the World League of American Football, NFL Europe. NFL maybe, you know, they send some games to London, maybe want a franchise there. What's it going to take for NFL to really leap beyond the borders?
Well, what does it take any league? Money. right? I think it might, it's an odd analogy, but I think it works. There was a time, believe it or not, certainly before I was alive, that the Dodgers were in Brooklyn. And the problem with them moving to Los Angeles at the time, believe it or not, was travel. People did not believe that a team could thrive or even survive even in California, in this own country, because St. Louis, as of 1958, when the Dodgers moved, were the farthest team out west. So what they did was, instead of going out alone, they convinced the New York Giants to travel out to San Francisco to bring two baseball teams to California. So in the football context, I think you would have to bring two teams to Europe in order for that to work.
London versus Paris. We could see that someday. Jason, that's all the time we have. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, sir.
That's Jason Keitel, a sports writer for CBS in New York City.
Coming up, we'll talk about pharmaceuticals found in Lake Michigan.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.